Hey, I'm Kelly McEvers, and this is the second episode of The Network. If you haven't listened to the first episode, go back and start there. In the first episode, we traveled to Brazil to follow a discovery that a pill for stomach ulcers could be repurposed for abortion, no doctor required. Soon after that, a network started to form in Brazil, a whisper network, really, where women were telling each other about these pills, passing on info person to person about where to get the pills and how to use them. In this episode, our hosts, Victoria Estrada and Marta Martinez, take us to a new era of the network when it moves way beyond whispers and beyond Brazil. Here's Victoria and Marta.
Saintotec. That was the name that some Brazilian doctors started calling Cytotec in the 1980s, because far fewer women were dying from abortion complications, thanks to this ulcer pill. But not everyone was ready to canonize it. During the 90s, the Brazilian government cracked down on Cytotec, the commercial name of misoprostol, or miso for short. Eventually, the government banned the medication and labeled it a controlled substance, which meant miso had restrictions similar to what dangerous drugs like fentanyl now have. And conditions got harsh for women who had abortions. The government targeted them more and more, arrested them on charges of distributing miso and what prosecutors called self-induced abortion.
Uma faxineira está presa.
A cleaning lady has been arrested. She's suspected of having a clandestine abortion.
But despite official attempts to control miso, the secret was out. Reproductive health workers in Latin America heard about the pill when they traveled.
Some people got some from Colombia, and then some people got some from Brazil.
From a Peruvian city in the Amazon jungle.
Pero acá nosotros utilizamos una pastilla.
And she said, here we use a pill.
¿Y qué pastilla será?
And I said, what pill is that?
To huge feminist gatherings across Latin America called encuentros, where women chatted about it in the hallways.
Un grupo así,
we were in a group talking, and they said, look, we've been using Cytotec, and it's working well.
Word of the pill was moving out of Brazil to countries where abortion was also mostly banned and deeply stigmatized.
And so we were just like, well, how do we use this?
Activists who were getting their hands on miso saw its potential, widespread access to safe abortions. But to make that happen, they needed to get organized, which sparked a whole new set of questions.
How could they talk about something that had been almost unspeakable? And even if they did, was talking enough? This episode, we're going to Ecuador, Argentina, and Mexico. All places where the women who make up this diffuse network took on these questions, teaming up, challenging each other, sometimes even breaking the law to change it. I'm Marta Martinez.
I'm Victoria Estrada.
And this is The Network, a series about the DIY method that took safe abortions out of the clinic and the women who made it happen.
Episode 2, Breaking Bread. The activists in Latin America who knew about miso had a problem. Abortion was highly criminalized. It was stigmatized. How could they get women access to something illegal? Something that was shrouded in shame?
The obvious option was to keep the conversation and their actions hidden, whispering sister to sister. And that's basically what happened for more than a decade.
But in 2008, activists in Latin America took a totally different tack. In the middle of Quito, Ecuador, there's a statue of a virgin, La Virgen del Panecillo. She's slightly taller than Rio de Janeiro's famous Christ the Redeemer. She has wings spread out, like an angel. One day, a group of women decided to pull a stunt. They were a mix of Ecuadorian activists and activists from Women on Waves, an abortion access organization based in the Netherlands. They plotted how to get to the statue's balcony without attracting attention.
There are two guards there, yeah. So we need some beautiful blondes to distract them.
A 2014 documentary called Vessel recorded their efforts.
We are occupying the Virgin with a lot of women. Yeah.
they hung a big white banner on the balcony of the Virgin statue. The banner said, "Safe Abortion," with a phone number. That number was for the first abortion hotline in Latin America. The documentary shows them getting nearly 80 calls within the first few hours.
Hello, te llamo de Salud Mujeres.
This idea for a hotline and the stunt promoting it threw the Latin American network into a new, more public era. They reached thousands of women this way. Their work was bold. It was organized. And maybe most importantly, it was replicable. Women in other countries had been watching what happened in Ecuador.
And a year later, Argentina started its own hotline.
In
the beginning, the hotline was so bare bones. We had a small backpack with a Nokia 1100, a notebook, some flashcards, and a process we had built rigorously.
This is Ana Mines, one of the first volunteers of the Argentinian helpline. She was part of the collective Lesbians and Feminists for Abortion Decriminalization. She and I talked in her living room in Buenos Aires with her cat sitting on her lap. She told me that when they started the helpline in the summer of 2009, they were just a dozen volunteers. They didn't climb a statue. Instead, they put up posters and stickers all over Buenos Aires. They were on TV, where they shared their phone number.
¿A qué número le
llaman? Al 011-1566-64-7070.
And they had a weekly radio show on the channel Agencia Paco Urondo.
La columna de lesbianas y feministas por la descriminalización del aborto.
Pretty soon, the helpline was flooded with calls.
La demanda era mucho más.
The demand was for more.
Siempre fue mucho más.
It was always for a lot more.
Volunteers gave callers step-by-step information on how to self-manage an abortion with MISO.
In Argentina, no one had ever done what this collective was doing. Speaking so openly about abortions and how to do it on your own. Not everyone was happy about it.
I said, do we have to do this? So public. You are nuts.
This is Mariana Romero, the executive director of CEDES, the Center for State and Society Studies. She's a prominent reproductive health researcher and advocate for abortion rights in Argentina. Mariana and other feminists worried that the helpline could inadvertently reduce access to MISO.
You are going to make the pharmaceutical company that produced misoprostol take it out of the market.
That wasn't the only risk of their work. The helpline was operating in uncharted territory. Since abortion was mostly banned, the volunteers worried any work they did on abortion could put them or the women they helped in jail. But as the years passed, no helpline volunteers were ever arrested.
And so they got more provocative with the way they talked about abortion. A year after launching the helpline, they printed a manual explaining how to self-manage an abortion by taking MISO without a doctor. It's thorough, more than 100 pages long. The cover is all pink with two big rainbows and a bunch of bills with smiley faces. And on the back,
tenía una Barbie atrás que y un arcoíris enorme y la tapa.
On the back, it had a picture of a Barbie and a huge rainbow.
She's in a pink convertible with sunglasses and a glamorous scarf over her head.
Y unas letras así como un poco celebratorias y.
And in a fun font, it said, "Barbie, how'd it go?"
Me fue bárbaro, decía Barbie.
It was awesome, Barbie said.
Ana says women were hungry for this information.
It was a bestseller. It had two printings of 10,000 copies each.
Ana, like a lot of the early helpline volunteers, is a lesbian. She saw echoes of her own experience in the shame and stigma that women faced when they wanted an abortion. She says the helpline and the manual were driven by a lesbian philosophy.
Del no closet.
Refusing to be in the closet.
Del no estigma. Del
salir no stigma. Of getting out there and saying, yes, we're here.
Being public was one pillar of the helpline strategy. The other was relying on science. Both the manual and the script that the helpline volunteers used were based on scientific research.
Starting in the 90s, researchers from around the world had taken an interest in what Latin American activists had been doing. They ran studies on women taking miso to end their pregnancies in places all over the globe, from Africa to Southeast Asia. Sometimes researchers worked in partnership with the activist. Over and over, they found that using miso in this way was safe and effective, and they developed best practices for it. Their research led the World Health Organization to add miso to its essential medicines list in 2005. Helpline volunteers cited this body of research on their calls, and it gave them credibility. By the 2010s, the helpline and the manual were disseminating all that scientific information to tens of thousands of women in Argentina.
Ana herself was able to help thousands of women through the helpline. But sometimes, as she spoke to women, Ana wanted to stay in touch.
If a specific story affected me and made me anxious and I wanted to stay involved, a colleague would say, no, it's not your role. We didn't have the capacity. And in political terms, that wasn't our project.
But other activists were concerned. They were aware of all the hype around abortion helplines, but skeptical about the approach.
How do you know for sure that those women are not at risk? You gave them information and then what?
¿Consiguió las pastillas, no las consiguió?
Did she get the pills or didn't she? Did she end up in the hospital? Did she do something wrong?
No sabe nada.
You actually don't know anything.
This is Verónica Cruz, who goes by Vero. She's an activist in Mexico doing something completely different than the helplines. Something that would push the envelope much further. After the break, we follow Vero to Mexico.
The helplines, the Barbie manual, all of it was aimed at spreading the word about miso and changing how people were talking about abortion.
But Veronica, who you heard before the break and who goes by Vero, didn't think spreading information was enough. She used a different strategy in the feminist collective she started in Mexico. The collective is called Las Libres, which means the free.
Las Libres es mi vida, el acompañamiento es mi vida, lo puedo hacer 24/7.
Las Libres is my life, acompañamiento is my life. I can do it 24/7.
Acompañamiento, that's the name of her approach.
Usually people translate acompañamiento as accompaniment. It's not a word you use in English very often, but in Spanish, you hear it all the time. It can mean being with someone, but also supporting them, or just keeping them company.
I love the root of the word, which comes from Latin companis. It means the people you break bread with, your companions, the people you trust.
And for abortion, it's come to mean being there during the whole process, from beginning to end, regardless of the legal risks.
Based on our reporting, Vero's collective, Las Libres, was the first group in Latin America, and possibly the world, to start doing acompañamiento with miso. I visited Vero last fall at the Las Libres office in Guanajuato, a city in central Mexico.
Wow, está muy bien la vista.
Their office is more homey than corporate. It's in a three-story house that's nestled into the hills. Vero founded Las Libres nearly a decade before any of the helplines started. At the time, abortion in Mexico was essentially banned. In the state where Vero lives, the only exception was for women who were raped. But even in those cases, hospitals often denied women their right to the procedure. So Vero was working with a gynecologist to help women who'd been raped get legal abortions. And in 2000, this doctor, like a growing number of doctors around the world, started to use miso for abortions. Vero remembers the first time she saw the doctor give a woman miso.
Yo me quedé así de, ¿qué?
I was like, what? No way.
It was nothing like a surgical abortion. And Vero had a realization.
Yo lo puedo hacer.
I mean, I can do it.
Comprar las pastillas.
I can just buy the pills, tell the woman how to use them. That was like an incredible discovery for me.
Not long after, a woman came to the Las Libres office.
Me dijo, yo no soy víctima de violación.
She told me, I'm not a rape victim, but I also want to interrupt.
Interrupt her pregnancy. This woman didn't qualify for legal abortion in Mexico because she wasn't a rape survivor. So Vero didn't send her to the doctor.
Nadie le tenemos que decir si fue o no fue víctima de violación.
I said, we don't have to tell anyone if she was or wasn't a rape victim, that it's going to stay here between us.
Vero decided to accompany the woman through the whole process, even though it was risky. Where Vero lived, any method of ending a pregnancy that wasn't a result of rape carried a prison sentence for the woman and anyone who helped her. But unlike in Brazil, in Mexico, MISA was easy to get. Even though you technically needed a prescription, you could often get it over the counter. So Vero told the woman to just go buy the pills. And she did. She got the MISO and went home.
Siempre estaba yo monitoreando.
I was always monitoring her.
For any complications. Even though Vero had seen how the pills work, how easy it was to use them. She says it was nerve-wracking to support someone through an abortion without a doctor.
Entonces yo dormía así con mi celular aquí, ¿no?
So I slept with my cell phone on my chest all the time, like in case it rang or something.
The next day, the woman went to a doctor who confirmed her pregnancy had ended without any complications. Vero's first time doing acompañamiento had gone smoothly. After that, when someone contacted Las Libres for an abortion and they were not rape survivors, Las Libres didn't send her to the gynecologist they'd been working with. They handled it themselves.
Nos prometimos a nosotras mismas que
we promised ourselves that we were never going to leave anyone without access, whatever we had to do.
If a woman couldn't afford to buy miso, which was expensive in Mexico, Las Libres would give her the pills for free. If a woman could afford miso, sometimes she had leftover pills. Vero suggested what to do with them.
Yo decía, la próxima mujer que venga, tú le vas
I told
a
them, the next woman who comes, you are going to give her the pills as a gift, and you are going to tell her about your experience.
Vero would set up a meeting between the two women, in a park or at a mall. The woman who'd had an abortion would share her leftover pills and her story. Eventually, some women did this, even when Vero hadn't asked.
Eso se fue multiplicando, multiplicando, multiplicando.
That was multiplying and multiplying and multiplying.
By connecting women directly, one by one, Las Libres was recruiting volunteers and growing the network.
Hay personas que desde ese origen.
There are people from those beginnings who are still accompanying or even started their own groups.
Las Libres helped create accompaniment networks that today reach every state in Mexico. But over the years, some activists criticized Vero's approach. For them, real change was changing the law. Vero remembers one conference where activists told her that what she was doing compromised their movement for abortion rights. They didn't want to be associated with people like her, who were breaking the law.
Ellas decían que lo que nosotras estábamos.
They said that what we were doing of accompanying the women and giving them the pills was risky for us.
Era riesgoso para nosotras y para todo el movimiento.
For us and for the whole movement.
Porque si te detienen a ti, casi van a venir por todas.
Because if they arrest you, it's like they are going to come for everyone.
But Vero believed the system she'd helped create was necessary and more humane than what the helplines across Latin America offered. And she actually didn't care if others were worried that her methods might damage legalization efforts.
Si nos vamos a la legalización, no vamos a acabar nunca.
If we go down the legalization route, we'll never finish, or it will take a very long time. So we need concrete answers.
Many activists in the network across Latin America found themselves on opposite sides. Some were fighting to legalize abortion. Those women were playing the long game, you might say. Others were actively breaking the law, because women who needed abortions immediately couldn't wait until the law changed. But one group realized they didn't have to make a choice between the two sides. That's after the break. Acompañamiento with miso started in Mexico, but in Argentina, women took it to the next level. Last fall, I went to a feminist gathering called an encuentro. It was being held in a small Argentine city called San Salvador de Jujuy, near the Andes Mountains. The days of women whispering about miso in the hallways, those are long gone.
I've never seen so many women together in
one place. Yeah, absolutely.
More than 50,000 women flooded this town. And there was one woman you just couldn't miss. Her name is Ruth Zurbriggen. At the encuentros, she's usually the person with the megaphone and seemingly endless energy. Ruth is one of the founders of the Argentinian accompaniment network Socorristas en Red, which translates to First Responders Network. Even traveling doesn't keep her from doing acompañamiento. Ruth told me she was going to accompany three women in between her packed schedule at the encuentro.
Una de ellas va a usar
esta and one of them is going to be using misoprostol tonight at around 11:30 p.m.
Ahí voy a estar.
So I'll be there.
Ruth took the acompañamiento model and scaled it. She started Socorristas en Red in 2012. It's now the biggest abortion accompaniment collective in the world. And to make that happen, she and the Socorristas decided to build systems, turning the art of acompañamiento into a science. That started with a simple step, not exactly a revolutionary one.
Y ahí dijimos, hagamos una ficha.
We said, let's make a form.
Y hagamos un pequeño seguimiento.
Let's do a little follow-up.
The Socorristas survey was exhaustive.
Nosotras éramos hartantes.
We were annoying, really annoying with the women.
They asked straightforward questions, like, how many weeks pregnant were you? Did you have a successful abortion?
Queremos saber.
You need to tell us, because this is going to be useful for others.
Es importante.
Other questions were more personal. Why did you decide to have an abortion? Does your partner know? Are you religious?
And I think it's because we were conscious that we were also producing science.
Estábamos produciendo ciencia también.
They tracked the data on spreadsheets, carefully documenting trends in women's experiences self-managing with miso. And the Socorristas quickly noticed that a lot of women were finding them in pretty unexpected ways.
30% had come to us recommended by healthcare professionals.
Y ahí dijimos,
and that's when we said,
¿qué está pasando?
What's happening?
¿Quiénes son?
Who are they?
Ruth was surprised. In general, doctors in Argentina were not on board with abortion, especially when they weren't happening in hospitals. The Socorristas wanted to understand why medical staff were referring patients to them, a group that was working outside the medical system and the law. So they used guerrilla tactics to build relationships with them. They started scheduling appointments with these doctors, as if they were personal appointments, so that they could talk to them in private.
Y empezamos a armar una vinculación ahí también.
And we started creating a bond with professional medical staff. And then we started asking them, what's the problem if you write 2 prescriptions a month for us?
En nada.
Nothing, right? And they write us 2 or 3 prescriptions for us with different dates. And we'd get mail names from friends or sons.
Y las recetas iban a nombre de ellos.
And the prescriptions would be under mail names.
This is not something Socorristas do anymore. And when they did it, it was illegal. Many feminists weren't comfortable with Ruth's work.
She was a little bit too radical for me.
This is Mariana Romero again. She's the reproductive health researcher you heard earlier, who fought to legalize abortion in Argentina.
Radical how?
Well, because they were open about having abortions at home and being with women having their abortions at home. I was like, what?
Just like with Las Libres in Mexico, feminists in Argentina worried that socorristas would damage their country's movement for abortion rights because it would be associated with criminal activity. But some of the doctors and nurses socorristas scheduled appointments with were happy to help, even though they risked losing their license. I talked to a couple of them. An OBGYN named Gabriela Lucchetti said sending patients who needed an abortion to the socorristas wasn't a hard choice.
¿Sabes qué es lo que sentimos?
Do you know what we felt?
Alivio.
Relief.
Alguien iba a hacer.
Someone was going to do what we didn't dare to because we had a license and we were afraid of the law.
Teníamos miedo a la ley.
A general practitioner named Nadia Sherbovsky told me she gladly signed a prescription every once in a while.
Por mucha confianza hacia ellas.
I trusted them and I believed in the practice, but also to feel like I was contributing in a tiny way.
A few years later, research showed that doctors had reason to trust the socorristas. A study published in an influential academic journal called The Lancet Global Health found that abortions with the socorristas' support were just as safe and effective as those that happened in a clinic.
And then in 2018,
Argentine lawmakers began an historic debate on legalizing abortion. More than
30 years after feminists in Argentina started a movement to legalize abortion, the Argentinian Congress considered a law that would make abortion a right. More than 700 people gave speeches at the Congress, including helpline volunteers and the socorristas.
Buenas tardes. Soy activista feminista.
Since socorristas had been accompanying women through their abortions, they had specific stories they could share. This is a socorrista reading the words of women who'd sought the collective's help. They came from different class backgrounds and needed abortions for different reasons. One was in college. Another had lost her job. Another had recently separated from her partner.
Me acabo de separar. Tengo hijos chicos. No quiero más. No nos dicen los motivos.
The socorristas had all these stories from the survey responses, the data they'd been tracking for 5 years. In that time, they'd accompanied nearly 20,000 abortions.
This data challenged beliefs that Argentinians had. Socorristas showed that the women who are most likely to have abortions were already mothers, and that many of them were religious. Here's Ruth again.
How did socorristas contribute? The one thing I consider the most important is that we erased the idea of abortion as a clandestine practice. We said, people here are having abortions. You can have a safe abortion, yes.
Sí, se puede abortar en casa.
And you can do it at home.
Some of the other feminists who testified in front of Congress, like the researcher Mariana Romero, had been critical of the socorristas, but she and other skeptics came around.
They were radical, but if they weren't, I don't know if things would have happened the way they happened.
From sharing information about the pills in hallways at feminist gatherings, to taking abortion out of the closet, to building a whole support system for women having self-managed abortions. Feminist efforts, decade after decade, helped change the law. And in 2021, abortion became legal in Argentina. Now, any woman can go to a hospital or a community clinic and ask for an abortion up to 14 weeks, no explanation needed. And it became common practice for doctors to prescribe miso for abortion.
Argentina was just the beginning. The campaign there to legalize abortion, which brought together a broad range of feminist groups, inspired feminists all over Latin America. Argentinians made the green bandana the symbol for their movement, and the fight to legalize abortion across the region became known as the Green Wave. And then, within a couple of years, Colombia and Mexico decriminalized abortion.
Mexico's Supreme Court has declared loudly and clearly that access to abortion care is a human right.
This major legal shift made news all over the world.
In other words, Mexico just got its Roe versus Wade today.
And at the center of this whole movement was a tiny pill.
Misoprostol es una revolución tecnológica.
Misoprostol is a technological revolution that when you put it in the hands of women and those who need an abortion,
genera esa otra revolución.
It generates another revolution. It's a cultural, social, political, medical revolution.
But the news up north sounded very different.
Thank you for joining us on a day that changed America. We're outside the Supreme Court after the landmark decision that overturned Roe versus Wade and ended a woman's constitutional right to an abortion. As you can see behind
the same year Colombia decriminalized abortion, the U.S. was moving in the opposite direction.
My body, my choice!
People are just absolutely terrified.
Outrage. Disgust, anger.
They are experiencing spiraling anxiety.
In some states, like, we're talking about homicide charges.
In our final episode, we follow the network to the United States.
Yeah, we've certainly been called drug dealers. We've been called murderers, abortionists, you name it.
That's next time on The Network. All episodes of The Network are available right now.
If you want more about The Network, like photos from Marta's trip to Argentina, go to npr.org/embeddednetwork. That's npr.org/embeddednetwork.
The Network from Embedded is a collaboration with Latino USA, a production of Futuro Media.
This episode was produced by Adelina Lancianis, Ariana Garib-Lee, Monica Morales-Garcia, and Abby Wendell. Raina Cohen edited the series.
Fact-checking by Cecile Davies-Vasquez and Nicolette Kahn. Robert Rodriguez mastered the episode.
Liana Simstrom is our supervising senior producer. Katie Simon is our supervising senior editor. Irene Noguchi is our executive producer. And Colin Campbell is the senior vice president for podcasting at NPR.
The Embedded team also includes Luis Treyes and Dan Gurma.
From Latino USA, our executive producers are Marlon Bishop and Benilei Ramirez. And our production managers are Jessica Ellis and Nancy Trujillo.
Thanks to our managing editor of Standards and Practices, Tony Cavan. And to Johannes Dergi and Micah Ratner for legal support. And Tommy Evans, NPR's managing editor, Editorial Review. Our visuals editor is Emily Bogle. Original tile art by Luke Medina.
Voiceovers by Alejandra Márquez Hanse, Laura Sotobarra, María Vázquez, Rosa Montes, Mónica Morales García, Gabriela Simón Cerejido, and Andrea de Alba Álvarez.
Special thanks to Dee Redwine, Susana Chávez, Alicia Cacopardo, Giselle Carino, Mabel Bianco, Julia McReynolds-Pérez, Alisa Natwarney, Selena Simmons-Duffin, and Kiara Eisner.
Archival footage from Euronews, Vessel, Agencia Pacurondo, and the YouTube channel for the National Campaign for Safe, Legal, and Free Abortions in Argentina. And a big thanks to our Embedded Plus supporters.
Funding for this series provided in part by the Levi Strauss Foundation, outfitting movements and leaders fighting for a more just and abundant world, and the International Women's Media Foundation as part of its Reproductive Health, Rights, and Justice in the Americas initiative. I'm Marta Martinez.
I'm Victoria Estrada.
This is Embedded from NPR.
Thanks for listening.
Muchas gracias por escuchar.